Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Asta Tarasata Sri Srimad Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Acharya Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai. Aim Shikho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adwaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Mathura Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namaste Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nifti Namani. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesa Sanyavani Vaska Jade Satarani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupa Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Samasajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamcha. Ramananda, I'm number 699.
Yes. Now, what's happened is that my computer has frozen. So everybody that's on free conferencing, I'm going to have to close out. And if you could call back in 2 or 3 minutes once I close out this program. Everybody is on Skype right now, but my browser is frozen. So if you could just call back everybody on free conferencing in about three or four minutes, all set.
So what do? We log off a free conference?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I'm just going to restart my browser. That's what happened. Sorry.
Do you want me to start the class without the without the visual right now then?
Yes, if you could, that would save some time. No.
So we're looking at Isha Upanishad mantras 15 through 18. And first we're going to do an overview. So mantra 15 establishes that the Lord is beyond his effulgence, that there is the beyond the light of the Brahma Jyoti, there is a personal God, and says, please remove this light so I can see your form. Then mantra 16 continues this request, but with more description of what that form is. It's a form of bliss, and there's details given. So we have two mantras saying, please remove the light, let me see your form. One just says, let me see your form. The other says, let me see your form of bliss. You are the primeval philosopher, etc. Then mantra 7 expresses the longing to think about this form at the time of death, and mantra 18 is begging for mercy and release from sin in order to serve the Lord. So this ending of Isha Upanishad is bringing us to the ultimate conclusion, which is the development of greed. Right? Because the first thing we learned in Isha Upanishad is that both spiritual and material happiness come from acting as a part of the complete whole, who's overflowing with love, completely full. And that if we act as part of that complete whole, then everything that we want, everything that we need, is completely fulfilled. And then Isha Upanishad, of course, that was not only in the invocation, but also the first three mantras, how to act as part of the complete whole, by using what's our quota, not using what's somebody else's quota, by connecting everything with Krishna. Then in the next few mantras, 4 through 8, we learn the qualities of the Lord, not just that he's the complete whole, but what are his qualities, and the vision and the consciousness that we need to understand those qualities. So beyond just using our quota, beyond just connecting everything with Krishna, how to come to transcendental vision and consciousness. Then in the next verses, 9 through 11 and 12 through 14, then we want to distinguish between the supreme and everything else. First, we're distinguishing between ignorance and false knowledge and real knowledge. Then we're distinguishing between materialistic so-called religion, lesser forms of transcendence, and the supreme transcendence. So now we know exactly what we want. We want to connect with the complete whole through divine consciousness, distinguishing matter from illusion. And at the same time, we want to do so in a vision of seeing equality. So now that we know what we want, our eagerness for it has increased. It's just like if somebody's seeing advertisements to go on a trip to Hawaii. So after seeing those advertisements, their eagerness increases. They say, yes, let me go. Then they start actually putting their heart into it. This, of course, is the essence of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, where Krishna tells Arjuna, just think of me with love. And he says, if you can't do that, then practice Abhyas Yoga, Sadhana Bhakti. Why? To develop a desire, to develop Ichha. And also we learn from Rupa Goswami that the perfection of life cannot be attained just by pious activities and thousands of lives, but rather by greed, by intense desire. Really, Prabhupada says the way we attain perfection is simply by the desire for perfection. So these last verses of Isha Upanishad is the devotee having realized the first part of the Isha Upanishad, now focusing on his desire. Ramananda, can we log back in yet?
Yes, I'm sorry. I had to unmute. Yes, we're just waiting. Go ahead and log in.
So we can go back to freeconferencing.com and log on?
That's correct.
All right. So, to participant login. Okay, I'm logging in now so that you can all see the screen. Just give me a minute here.
Okay, I see you. I'm going to switch presenters.
Okay, let me know when I'm
waiting for participant to accept as a presenter. Switching.
Okay. Are we now on? Can you all now see my screen?
Yes, we can see your screen now.
Okay. So now that you've got the visual here. Alright. So this is what I just said. This is our summary of Isha Upanishad, leading us to our present place. So now that we're looking at what we want bhakti. Why bhakti? Why do we want bhakti? Because we won't have any more sins. That's covered in these mantras. Please relieve me from my past sins. And we start to come to who we are. You are like us unto the sun, as am I. That I am a soul. I'm not just something material.
And no more material miseries. Let this temporary body be burned to ashes. Let the air of life nourish the totality of air. And how the Lord is the protector. That's a real theme of these mantras. And Prabhupada is sensitive, especially in mantra 17. How even if we fall from the path, Krishna protects us. These are reasons why we should have greed for bhakti. Okay, we have our little poem here. Lord, we cannot see beyond your glow, but it is you we wish to know. Lord, we cannot see beyond your glow, but it is you we wish to know. Those of you who can see this, you see we have a nice drawing here. Mantra 15. Oh, my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure beauty. This mantra is just establishing that there is a Lord beyond the effulgence, and the only information we get here is that he is the sustainer, and that he has a real face. This photo, that those of you can see, this is an actual unretouched photograph taken by Vrindavan Leela Devi Dasi in Mayapur of Lord Nrsingadev. So she went and took a photograph of Lord Nrsingadev. She went to look at it in her camera. This is what it looked like. Simply the effulgence. Pretty amazing. So this is what the devotee is asking. Please remove this effulgence. Hiranyayena Patrena, the golden effulgence covering. Satyasya pihitam mukham, truth-covered face. Your face, which is covered by the rays of truth, which Prabhupada translates as your real face is covered by dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself. And Prabhupada has often making the point that we're not God. Prabhupada uses as many verses as possible to make the point, hey, you're not God. So in the purport, he says, the living entity should never consider the all-powerful supreme truth. If he were the supreme, he would not need to pray to the Lord to remove his dazzling cover so that the living entity could see his real face. And Prabhupada now criticizing those who want to merge into this Brahman, where he says the demons that Krishna kills goes into the Brahman. Why do you want to go there? You know, whenever we have some desire that, oh, I just want to get away from everything. I don't like anyone. I don't like anything. Just let me go away, hide in my room, put my covers over my head. You know, the reason people take drugs and alcohol. Or, you know, it's just this wanting to merge into the Brahman, wanting to become nothing, you know, when people commit suicide. But Prabhupada says, is that a very covetable thing? Is it very nice to be merged into the Brahman? No, that's where the demons go. That's not what we're looking for. Okay, we're going to look at the relationship between mantras 12 to 14 and mantra 15. So in mantras 12 to 14, we understood that we had to understand Krishna in relationship with his material energy. If you remember, it was talking about the difference between Sambhutim and Asambhutim, and how we had to know both the Lord and his material energy. In mantra 15, here we're saying that we need to know both the Lord and his spiritual energy, his Brahman Jyoti. Now, we have, again, this question of this sort of mystery of Ishopanishad, that in mantras 12 and 13, it said that those who are going to the Brahma Jyoti is lower than the demigods, and yet, you know, the spiritual energy is higher. Generally, it's said that it's higher, and in this last purport, Prabhupada also makes that point. And again, we just want to reiterate that misapplied knowledge is more dangerous than materialism. Even though, in one sense, those who are interested in the Brahma Jyoti, that's a higher principle than those who are interested in the demigods. Still, it's actually more, as we saw in the quotes last week, it's more dangerous to negate your personal identity, much more dangerous than to have a personal relationship even with the demigods. So Prabhupada is describing the three aspects of the absolute truth. That because there's people today who are just saying merge into the light. Let's just merge into the light. Let's just be one with the light.
Okay.
But beyond that is the Paramatma feature that's maintaining the material creation. Some of you don't have your microphones muted, so we can hear kinds of funny noises. And beyond Paramatma feature that's maintaining the material creation.
Right. Right.
Anybody who's got, I can't tell who's unmuted, but please, if you're.
Yeah, they're all.
I got it. Sorry, mother and mother. I found it.
Okay.
Close them up.
Okay, you didn't knock them off, right? You just muted them.
I had to knock them off. What could be them?
Okay, well, can you send them a separate note explaining what happened so that they know?
Of course.
Thank you so much. Okay. So. Beyond just the light, there's the maintainer. The light is not maintaining anything. It's Paramatma, the super soul. The super soul. Just like in our body, there's so many living entities. So many, you know, our cells are each alive, and then there's little bacteria. But we are the supreme living entity within our body. Just like you have the manager of a business. My son was telling me the other day how Company A bought up Company B, and even though Company B made a hefty profit, 18% profit, Company A decided it wasn't enough. So they didn't sell Company B, they just closed it. And all the 500 employees were out of a job. So it's something like that. When we leave this body, all of the millions of employees in our body that we're maintaining, all the little cells that we're maintaining, all the little bacteria, they're all of a sudden they're out of a job, and they got to go. We are the supreme soul in the body. So in a similar way, Krishna is the supreme soul in the universe. And when he wants to wind up the universe, then we're all out of a job. And all of our little activities are finished, and we enter into the body of Mahavishnu. And he's the overseer, the permitter, the witness. He's the fifth factor of action. He's the one who's really doing everything. But even beyond him, there's Bhagavan. Paramatma is certainly a person, but he's Krishna at work. He's not the full manifestation of a person. Just like you meet somebody at work, you know, maybe you understand their name on their name tag, oh, hi, Holly. But how much do you know about Holly? Whereas Bhagavan is actually sustaining the others. He is the real Lord whose face we want to see. Right? He is a person behind the light. I hope you like this picture. Made by one devotee who lives in Vrindavan that I had the pleasure of meeting. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, Krishna is always filled with transcendental bliss, ananda maya vyasat. The killings of various demons such as Agabaka, Putin, and Kalamba were but pleasure excursions for him. I found it very significant that in the purport to Mantra 15, Prabhupada goes on at length about Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna with Mother Yasoda, Krishna killing the demons, that as soon as Srila Prabhupada, as soon as Prabhupada sees the word mukham, face, please reveal your face beyond the light, then immediately he starts talking about his transcendental Lord. So although Srila Prabhupada has a mission, let's defeat impersonalism and voidism, let's defeat Darwinism, let's defeat whatever, you know. He's interested in focusing on Krishna's face. You know, sometimes some of us get distracted by the important parts, but not central parts, of Srila Prabhupada's mission. So certainly Srila Prabhupada had a mission to establish Varnashrama. He had a mission to establish proper relationships between men and women. He had a mission to destroy the idea that we're just material beings come from a primordial soup. He had a mission to establish that God is a person. But really, the essence of all of Prabhupada's missions, the purpose for which Prabhupada has all of those other missions, is to meditate on Krishna's beautiful face and to enter into his Vrindavan Leela. Those of you can see this painting, how beautiful the world is. That's really the essence of our mission, and we should always remember the purpose. I'm just reminded of a story, just a true story, of a woman who was constantly vacuuming her house whenever her family was home. She had very thick rugs. And whenever anybody would walk on the rug, they'd leave impressions of their feet. And she thought it was her duty to keep the rugs always fluffy. So she would follow behind the members of her house, vacuuming behind them. So they got so frustrated with this, they took her to a... And fortunately, they took her to a very intelligent therapist. And he said, what does it mean when there's foot impressions in your rug? She says, it means that I'm not a good housekeeper. He said, no, it means your family's home. You're loved by your family. So the purpose of vacuuming the rug is to make a nice place for our family. The purpose of all the other things that Srila Prabhupada taught us, the purpose of family life, relationships, the position of women, the purpose of instructing about varnashram, being in your proper duty, the purpose of talking about having good government, of living ecologically, living on farms, the purpose of combating Darwin, all the purpose of that is so we can be with our spiritual family. They're not, if we get wrapped up in those things independently, if we think the purpose is just to vacuum the rug, then following behind all of our family members, vacuuming the rug after them, then instead of having the bliss of being with our spiritual family and ultimately the bliss of being in Krishna's family, then we're simply annoying everyone. Let's go on to mantra 16, which takes the principle of mantra 15 to another height, shall we say. Oh, my Lord, O primeval philosopher, so not just the face is sustaining, but the philosopher, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind. Please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss, and not just your face, not just your mukha, but your form of bliss. Are the
okay.
Like?
Probably before that.
As am I. So here we're establishing many things. The nature of Krishna, and that I am also a soul. Here again, we have this picture of the singing day covered by his effulgence, and this is an unretouched photograph. So, again, the speaker feelingly appeals to the Lord to remove the brahmajati effulgence obscuring his beautiful face, referring to different features in which he is kind to people. He and the Lord are one in quality, like the sun and its rays. So, Prabhupada often gives this analogy of sun and its rays in order to explain the relationship between Krishna and the Brahma Devotee. You can't separate. You can't say the sun exists without its rays or the rays exist without the sun. But still, the sun is more important than its rays, although you can't separate them. They're the same. And it's really interesting in this purport. Prabhupada talks about how the Brahman is still auspicious, the Paramatma is more auspicious, and Bhagavan is most auspicious. That he has all six opulences. The six opulences being beauty, strength, knowledge, wealth, fame, and renunciation. So I also have a seminar I give on these six opulences of Krishna, how we can meditate on each of these six opulences. But maybe we can think about this for a moment. I'm going to go back to the other slide. So Krishna's beauty is so great that when he goes into Mathura, the ladies, they leave their everything. They leave bathing their children. They leave getting dressed, right? Women don't generally leave getting dressed in the middle and go someplace. And they run to the balconies just to meditate on his wonderful beauty. Practically just seeing his beauty, the devotee, we were talking about on Wednesday, how an Aditi saw Lord Vishnu, how she just became speechless and stunned. What to speak of Krishna, the form of Vishnu who manifests even more beauty. So the devotee sees Krishna's beauty. They feel like they're drinking him through their eyes. You know, an ordinary person, I was once in an airport many, many years ago when I was waiting for a plane, and across the aisle there was this woman who was so beautiful. I don't know if I've ever seen such a beautiful person in this world. And she was so stunning that everybody who walked down the aisle of the airport, men, women, everybody was just staring at her. They couldn't stop staring at her. Of course, her beauty is very limited. You can tell how long ago this was because she pulled out a cigarette and started to smoke it. You can't do that in the airports anymore. As soon as she started smoking, she wasn't very beautiful anymore, and nobody paid any attention to her. And I'm sure that by this, that she's now probably 20, 30 years older, that nobody's paying attention to her anymore. But Krishna's beauty is so much greater than that of the most beautiful person on this planet, or the most beautiful aspect of nature. You'll see some rainbow in the sky and everybody wants to come see it, or whales jumping in the ocean, or a mountain where the sun is rising behind it. Actually, Krishna is compared to that, that when he entered back into Dwarka after dispatching one demon, I can't remember, I think it was Shalva, that it looked, he looked like the sun rising over the mountain. But still, Krishna's beauty really can be compared to any of those things. A mountain of sapphire is compared to in the 10th canto. And Krishna's wealth, Krishna's so wealthy that he had 16,108 palaces, one for each of his queens. So most men can't even have a palace for one wife, what to speak of for 16,000 wives. I just, you read some stories nowadays of the men who are practicing polygamy, and all of their wives and children are crowded into one apartment and they're getting welfare. You know, so Krishna's not like that. Each wife had a palace. And from each palace, he was giving away 13,000 cows every day. And he owns all of the wealth. He not only owns all of Bill Gates' wealth, he owns everybody's wealth. How do you know that? He can take it all away. And he knows everything. Unlimited, ever-increasing knowledge. You know, we know a little bit. We know a little bit. And the higher you go in education, the more you know about less and less and less and less and less. So I know a whole lot of the job satisfaction of the teachers of the Hare Krishna movement in 2005. But I don't really know much about anything else. So that's the nature of knowledge in this world. You know, someone gets a PhD and they'll know about the mating habits of the red-footed crab in the such-and-such river in Pennsylvania. And that's all they'll know about. And we call such persons educated people. But Krishna has all knowledge and all fame. Everybody's heard of God. Even the atheists have heard of God. And all strength. Krishna's holding up the planet effortlessly. They're like mustard seeds on his head. And all renunciation. Actually, that's the most attractive of Krishna's qualities. So it drives the devotees crazy because he leaves Vrindavan and he leaves the Rasa dance. But still, that's the most attractive. Renunciation means detachment. Krishna's not attached to displaying his opulences. Right? When you meet somebody who's very beautiful, very smart, very wealthy, very famous, very strong, and they're proud of it, that pride diminishes the attractiveness of their opulence. If you ever find a beautiful person who knows they're beautiful, they're strutting around like a peacock. It's not very attractive. Or if somebody's always saying, well, I know about this, and I know about that, and I know about that, well, it's not very attractive. But because Krishna's very detached, all of his other opulences are so attractive. Now, Prabhupada also talks about another meaning of the word Bhagavan, besides just he who has six opulences, and we're going to look at that here, that Bha means the maintainer and the guardian. How that he fully maintains his devotees, yoga kshema baham yaham. Interesting that in Bhagavad Gita 2.45, Krishna says, near yoga kshema atman, that be situated and give up all anxieties for gain and safety. And then later on, he says, yoga kshema vahamyaham. Why? Because I take care. And Krishna takes care in two ways, materially and spiritually. You can say, well, wait a minute. I've been worshiping Krishna, and I don't always have everything that I need. But if we really meditate on it, you see, we do have everything that we need. We have everything that we need to become Krishna conscious, and we have everything that we need to survive in this world. We don't always have everything we need in the way that we want it. It's like those of you who have children, you know that sometimes the way you deal with your children, they don't like it and they complain. Why are you doing this? You're so mean. I don't like you anymore. But actually parents, even ordinary parents, they're making sure their children have everything that they need. And even the things that they take away are for the good of their children. Right? One of our grandchildren here was throwing a toy around. We took it away. Why? We don't want her to break it, so she'll have it to play with tomorrow. So even the so-called taking away, we were reading that on Wednesday, that the material tribulations is part of the bhava. Knowing that Krishna is making all arrangements perfect arrangement for both our material and spiritual needs is one of the keys to being happy in all sorts of tribulations. So I have my own little mantra. You may develop different mantras. This is a mantra that works for me, that whenever I'm upset about something, I stop and say, Krishna is meeting all of my needs in his own wonderful way. I don't need to worry. I don't have any fear. Yoga Kshema Vahamyam. Krishna is taking care of everything that I need. Everything. That doesn't just mean that I'm going to get food and clothing. It means that even I'm going to get what I need in all respects. Just like good parents, ordinary parents, not even, you know, the world award for parenting. Ordinary parents, they feed their children. Ordinary parents give their children clean clothes. Ordinary children or parents make sure their children have their teeth brushed and take them to the doctor when they're sick. And ordinary parents go beyond that. They give their children an education. And ordinary parents make sure their children have friends. And make sure their children have toys. They don't provide just the bare necessities of life. So isn't Krishna better than some ordinary parent who has so many flaws? So in the same way, Krishna will give us everything. And Prabhupada often says how Krishna wants us to go back to home more than we do. So he will also give us everything that we need to go back to home, back to Godhead. We don't have to worry about that. We might think, oh, I'm in some situation now where becoming Krishna conscious is so difficult. But that's not a fact. Actually, Krishna has put us, each of us, individually, in the situation that's the best for us to go back to home, back to God. We may not be able to see it. We may think, oh, if only I had this change in my situation, then I could be Krishna conscious. If only I had this change. And I just can't do it. I have this circumstance, and I just can't change it. But to have some trust, Krishna's put me in the best situation right now for this moment in my life, for the state of advancement I have right now, for me to become Krishna conscious. The next is God, the guide or the leader of the Creator. That Krishna gives himself to the devotees, that he helps us to see him face to face. And again, we may think, well, I'm not seeing Krishna face to face. He's not giving himself to me. Oh, but he is. But he is. He's doing that in a way that we will also mature. Just like when you help someone to ride a bicycle. I've given this example many times. How my father taught me how to ride a bicycle. He didn't believe in training wheels. So he would run beside me holding on. And one day he let go. So Krishna sometimes appears to be at a distance to us, to help us to gain our own maturity. And man means everything lives in him, and he lives in every being. We are already in Krishna, and he's already in us. It's not that we have to go somewhere to find him. We simply have to connect with him. He's already in our heart. It's really nice how Prabhupada says he can bestow all necessary qualifications on the devotee so that he can reach him. This is our prayer for Tulsi Devi, Seva Adhikaro Diya. Give me the Adhikar that she told me was recited by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciples before they would go out on a preaching mission or go anywhere asking for victory. And the prayer ends with asking Radharani, Deva Adhikar, please give me the opportunity, give me the qualifications. The devotee never thinks, I'm so qualified. Why aren't I attaining? I chant my rounds of all the four little principles. I wake up early and attend Mangal Arti. I offer all of my food. I'm so good about this. I'm so good about that. I'm so good about that. Why aren't I seeing Krishna? No, the devotee says, I have no qualifications. The devotee has one qualification, and that is, and Krishna bestows all the necessary qualities. I'm going to find who's making all of that noise. It's not coming from my end. So the devotee says, Lord, for spiritual life, on you I depend, to always be there as guide and a friend. So You see, we have our little picture here and our mantra. Lord, for spiritual life, on you I depend to always be there as a guide and a friend. And here you see the devotee going on the path to Krishna. Now we're going to mantra 17, and this is actually a photograph of a funeral pyre of one devotee by the Yamuna. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, and let the air of life emerge with the totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. So this is a prayer specifically for the time of death, but even in our day-to-day life, it's a prayer to be free of the upadi, sarvapadi, vinyamutan, satparatena, nirmalam, rishikesha, rishikena, sevan, and bhakti, uchite. The other day I was listening to one lecture of Srila Prabhupada where he was saying that Prahlad Maharaj never thought that he was the son of Hiranyakashipu. He never thought like that. I am the son of Hiranyakashipu. He thought, I am the servant of Narada. I was reading I'm reading some books on management for some service that I'm doing for the DBC. And one of them was talking about how we, among other things, how we make decisions. It said that we might think that the way we make decisions is thinking, okay, this is my cost-benefit ratio. This is the benefits I'll get. This is the difficulty. Is it worth it? And it's interesting because I've generally thought that that's how I make decisions. It said, though, that most people don't make decisions like that. They make decisions based on their identity. They say, okay, I'm an Indian. I'm an Indian young student. What would a young Indian student do in this situation? Or I'm a mother. What would a good mother do in this situation? You know, I'm a salesperson at Walmart. What would a salesperson at Walmart do in this situation? And in meditating on this deeply, I realized that this idea of identity is a lot of the reason why we take birth after birth. We basically want to try. Oh, what's it like to be a whale? What's it like to be a Nigerian tribesmen. What's it like to be, a housewife in Idaho? And we try on different identities, something like you get on stage and you try on this identity and that identity. And we want to try on these different identities. And therefore, we naturally want our actions to fit those identities. Okay, I'm a business manager, upper middle class person. I live in Los Angeles. What would an upper-middle-class Los Angeles-living businessman have in his living room for furniture? And that's how we make our decisions. So this prayer is letting go of all those qualities. Simply, I am a servant. Chaitanya Dasamui, Chaitanya Das, Chaitanya Dasamui, Tandra Dasera Das. I am simply the servant of Lord Chaitanya. I'm the servant of Lord Chaitanya. I'm the servant of Lord Chaitanya. I'm the servant of his servant. Whenever we need to make decisions in life, I'm a servant of Lord Chaitanya. I'm a servant of his servants. I'm Krishna's servant. I'm Radharani's servant. I'm Srila Prabhupada's servant. What would a proper servant of my spiritual master, what would a proper servant of God, what would they do in this situation? This prayer, of course, is also asking for the Lord to remember us. Om Krito Smara Kritam Smara Krito Smara Kritam Smara. I remember we looked at this verse when we were analyzing Ishapanishad according to Jiva Goswami. That Jiva Goswami says that every shastra has to have certain kinds of verses. One of them is repetition. Remember we talked about the surprise verse in looking through mantras 9 through 14. Here's the repetition verse. Krito, the supreme beneficiary, kritam, all that I have done for you. Oh, my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices. Because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. So this is not in a manipulative way. Okay, remember all I've done for you. We're keeping score here like we do in our material relationships. Remember I bought that house you wanted? Remember I bought that car you wanted? Remember I cleaned the kitchen the way you wanted? Now I want something from you. No, not like that. You know, I've done all this for you. You ungrateful wretch. Why don't you do anything for me? What can we do for Krishna? What can we do for Krishna? We can't do anything for Krishna. Krishna already has everything. Whatever we do is with his energies, his grace, using his intelligence, etc. What can we do? We're just saying this is more about relationship. Please remember everything. Please remember me. And Prabhupada comments on this, that at the time of death, even if we forget Krishna, Krishna won't forget us. Krishna won't forget us. Does that mean that the devotee who doesn't remember Krishna goes back to home, back to Godhead? No. Yam yam bhapi sambhavam twajachan tekalevam tam tam evadikantaya saratam bhavadavitaha. No, it's dependent on our remembering Krishna. But Krishna, the point is that Krishna will take care of us. Even if we are in nonsense, Krishna doesn't forget. Just like the parents, they don't forget their children who become nonsense. Right? They still look out for them. Okay, so Prabhupada talks to you about the time of death. He talks about getting freedom from the body. Getting freedom from the body. Prabhupada talks a lot in this purport about how we often think about our material activities, and that's what leads us from one body to another. Instead, we have to think about Krishna. And the perfection is not the Dhamma Jyoti in these two mantras that we already read, 15 and 16. We know that that's not perfection. Perfection is being with Krishna, the ultimate beneficiary, a person, wanting to remember that person, Krishna. And in this purport, Prabhupada explains how Krishna's relationship with his devotees is very intimate indeed. It's not a superficial relationship. He doesn't forget his devotees. And then, okay, that's all kind of theoretical. What's the practical? The practical is Prabhupada describes the nine processes of devotional service. And he gives an example. If you go to the Prabhupada's Pushpa Samadhi in Mayapur, you'll see one face relief diorama of each of the devotees who exemplify the perfection of each of the nine processes. And there's one purport where Prabhupada says that really there aren't nine processes. There's only one, and that all the processes in one sense are the same as the other. But in another sense, there's diversity, and one can analyze them as nine different processes. Okay, a couple of very important points in this purport is that thinking about what I've done will take us to another body, which I just mentioned. But, you know, that's what we often do throughout the day. Okay, what did I do yesterday? What did I do last week? Oh, I wish I had done this. Oh, I wish I had done that. Why did I do this? Oh, if only I'd done that. Lamenting about the past or hankering for the future. Oh, I'm going to be in the future. When this gets done, then I'll be happy. When this gets done, then I'll be happy. When this gets done, then I'll be happy. I just need to do this. I just need to do that. That will take us to another body, focusing on myself, what I've done, this hankering and lamenting. Rather to be absorbed now in what is Krishna doing and what do I have to do for Krishna now, which may, of course, involve looking at something in past and future, but the consciousness is absorbed in the now. Also, Prabhupada gives an extensive explanation of Bhagavad Gita 9:30-34. And if you haven't read through these mantras in preparation for this class, I would really strongly, strongly urge you to read Bhagavad Gita purport 9:30 and then to read the section in this purport of mantra 17. With Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, talking about 9:30. This is important on so many levels. I see that if this purport, these two purports, the one to 9:30 in the Bhagavad Gita and this one in Mantra 17 of the Upanishad, if this was properly understood in ISKCON, a tremendous amount of the fighting and bickering that goes on over certain topics would cease. Prabhupada talks here about how there's in the 9:30 talks about two swadharmas. Here he says there's double functions of a conditioned soul. And in both purports, he talks about parallel lines, that we have two functions. One is to take care of our body. You know, we have to clean it, we have to feed it, we have to clothe it. But it's not just that. We have to take care of our psychology. And we were talking about giving up all our upadis, but we do have to act according to our upadis. You know, if you have children, you can't just not act according to the upadi of being their mother. Let them starve and be diseased. Right? If you've got a wife, you've got to act in the upadi of being a husband. If you work for IBM, you've got to act in the upadi of being an IBM employee. You can't just say, well, I'm just not going to act according to those. I'm just going to give them up. Of course, you can just give them up if you're on a certain platform of consciousness. But Krishna doesn't recommend that. He says, even though at a certain level of consciousness you have no need to do those duties, you also have no need to give them up, and you should do them to set an example. So that means that we are going to have to do those actions. Then we have our purely spiritual activities, which Prabhupada has already explained, the nine processes of devotional service. And Prabhupada says, generally these two things run in parallel. In other words, generally speaking, I can both do my bhakti, my pure bhakti, and I can do my material activities in parallel, in a way that they support each other, and in a way that my so-called material activities become spiritualized, like a hot iron rod in the fire. Or an example I give, since most of us don't see hot iron rods put in fires anymore, is just a pot on the stove. If you've got the fire under the pot is also hot. So the fire is the nine processes. The pot is our, what would ordinarily be our material activities, my dear friends, means varnashrama, what ashram you're in, your gender, your ashram, and your varna. Ashram is primarily by age. So gender, age, and proclivity. So that's our material side of life. So those things generally, they support each other, and like the pot on the fire, even those material things become spiritual. Bhakti is not the Sarasvati. So nice, he explains this in the last five verses of the Brahma Samhita. How those activities that I do, I'm a wife, I'm a husband, I'm a mother, I'm a father, I'm an employee here, I'm a student, I'm a retired person, I'm a renounced person, I run a government, I'm a landlord, I'm a scholar, I'm a craftsperson, I'm an artist, I'm an entertainer, I'm a laborer, I'm a business person. All those things, that they end up supporting bhakti when they're used in bhakti. However, they in themselves are not bhakti. The pot has no fire. The pot is only hot when it's on the fire. So to be obsessed with the pot and forget about the fire is foolishness. If you're only going to have one, you ought to have the fire. Of course, cooking your food on the fire without a pot is generally a little inconvenient, right? We used to roast marshmallows when I was a kid, but at least you stick the marshmallow on a stick. Even if you put your potatoes on the fire, you wrap them in tinfoil. Put things right into a fire. So for most of us, we also want a pot, but you just focus on the pot, you use your fire. The other thing is that although both of these should run in parallel, you know, they don't always. There are sometimes when in order to do one, we have to neglect the other. If I'm going to do my material occupation perfectly, I may have to neglect my spiritual. And to do my spiritual, I may have to neglect my material. Sometimes they come in conflict with one another, Prabhupada explains in these two verses. When they come in conflict with one another, if the devotee chooses the spiritual, then from a material point of view, he may be doing something abominable. Just like my mother said, don't join the Hare Krishna movement. I disobeyed my mother and asked to join the Hare Krishna movement. According to Vedic standards, abominable. Worship of the father and mother is in the mode of goodness. I neglected my mother's direct order. Don't join the Hare Krishna movement. So that's abominable. But he says, even being abominable, if you're practicing Krishna consciousness, everything will be adjusted. And Prabhupada in this purport also says that we have to expect that sometimes there'll be some displays of worldliness until one's material upadis are totally finished. So that doesn't mean the externals of the material upadis, although that may also become finished, but internal, my consciousness. If I'm thinking I'm Hiranyakashipu's son, I'm going to behave differently than if I think I'm Narada's disciple. So Prahlad was still respectful to his father. So one who understands simply, I'm Lord Chaitanya's servant, they will be a better mother, they will be a better husband, they will be a better IBM employee, but their consciousness is I am Krishna's servant. So until that consciousness fully comes, as long as one still has some idea, I am a husband, I'm an IBM employee, then there may be some occasional worldliness, but the point is that Krishna still takes care. Krishna still takes care. You know, if you have a student that you're working with, it's not that you abandon them just because they become perfect in a day. Okay, going to the last mantra 18. Oh, my Lord, as powerful as fire. Oh, omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisance, falling on the ground at your feet. Oh, my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you, and since you know all that I've done in the past, please free me from the reactions to my past sins so that there'll be no hindrance to my progress. These are our hindrances. Our hindrances are not our difficult husband, our difficult boss, our broken body, our broken mind. Our hindrances are our material attachments, our past sins, our upadis. Therefore, we pray to Lord Narasingadev, Bhakti Vignan Vinash Narasingha, Sarva Vignan Vinash Narasingha. Vinash means to destroy. Vignan means an obstacle. Please destroy all my obstacles to bhakti. This is part of that greed. Right? The greed. Remove the effulgence. Let me see your face. Let me have a relationship with you. You, please remember me. Please get rid of my sins. Let me enter into your abode of bliss. Right? Prabhupada says this, Bodhi desires to achieve Krishna's mercy. The seeker humbly throws himself at the lotus feet of the Lord, begs for guidance and help. Help me. Right? Like the child crying for the mother. Help me. What can I do? One thing I can do only. I can only do one thing. Please. That's all I can do. I can't really do anything else. And I can make my whole life into a please. I can make my whole life into an I'm sorry and a please. But Krishna has to accept me back and give me his mercy. Like the person who's cheated on their spouse millions of times. What can they do? They can just sit outside the door with a genuine I'm sorry and a please. And they can start acting in their life to show the I'm sorry and a please. But their spouse has to open the door. And we've been cheating on Krishna for a long time. I want a sort of interesting aside. It's something that reports to Mantra 18, which answers a long-standing question that I had for many, many years. So we read about how the pure devotee is freed from the four defects. Illusion, imperfect senses, cheating, and mistakes. And yet we see in the lives of the pure devotees that they certainly make the kind of mistakes we think about in ordinary life. They might put their left shoe on their right foot. Prabhupada one time said New Virginia instead of saying New Vrindavan in West Virginia. They might quote a verse wrong. And so many things like that, which is what we normally think of as mistakes. In fact, there's a wonderful letter Prabhupada wrote to Atre Rishi saying that in Goloka Vrindavan, there's lots of mistakes. Krishna milks a bull instead of a cow when he's looking at Radharani. The gopis, Prabhupada said, dress themselves like small children, putting their clothes in the wrong places. So what do we mean by mistakes? So I find this definition given in this purport of Mantra 18, and this is reading right from the purport. In this mantra, Sri Ishopanishad, the devotee prays to the Lord to rectify him from within his heart. To err is human. A conditioned soul is very often apt to commit mistakes, and the only remedial measure to take against such unintentional sins is to give oneself up to the lotus feet of the Lord so that he may guide one to avoid such pitfalls. So here Srila Prabhupada is equating mistakes with unintentional sins, not putting the shoe on the wrong foot. And now we can understand why the pure devotee makes no mistakes. Why does a conditioned soul commit sins even without meaning to? Arjuna asked this question of Krishna. He said it's due to lust. So there are some intentional sins. Intentional sins is I say, okay, I'm going to go and steal your money. What's an unintentional sin? Unintentional sin is somebody said, hey, why'd you step on my foot? And we know we stepped on his foot, but we're afraid we're going to get in trouble. Did I step on your foot? I didn't know that was your foot. Right? So we're lying. We didn't intend to lie. We didn't wake up that morning planning to lie. But out of fear, out of lust to maintain our material position, we lie. So unintentional sins. Because we're covered with lust, we're committing so many sins. So here, that is the mistake. It's a mistake. It's something that's going to hurt our Krishna consciousness. You know, I'm sure we all wake up in the morning saying, okay, today I'm going to do everything that pleases Krishna. I'm going to have a day that's just full of everything's going to be spiritual. And then what happens? Somebody does something and you yell at them. You have to say, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to yell at you. Right? Or you spent all your time doing something that really wasn't so important. So these are unintentional sins. So we pray to Krishna, please guide me so that I will not commit any unintentional sins. Okay, how to die. Here again is another picture of that same funeral pyre. So how do we die? Only surrender. Not pious activities, not perfect following the Varnashram, not perfect following of our material dharma, even for thousands and thousands of lives. Even if we have made so many mistakes in our material dharma, obviously we should try to get our material dharma together, part of our service. But even if we've made so many mistakes, and then this Kali Yuga, my friends, who has their material dharma totally together? I haven't met very many people. Even if we've fallen in our spiritual life. I met one devotee the other day. He told me that he had asked Prabhupada, how can I always think of you? How can I always remain connected with you? He said, just always chant your 16 rounds, follow the principles before we go to principles. And I said, well, that's easy. She said, yeah, but I haven't done it. So maybe we've fallen down from our spiritual vows. Or maybe we've kept our spiritual vows externally. But maybe we had days or months or years where our japa was sloppy, the snick, snick, nom, nom, chanting japa while watching movies or something. Or maybe we weren't so careful about what we ate. Maybe we started waking up at 10 in the morning. But still, Krishna will help. Krishna still helps his devotees. We see so many examples of this. I talk about it as plan A and plan B, like those GPSs. You know, they call them, in the UK, they call them tum-tums. Those little things you have in your car that say, prepare to turn right now. And if you don't turn right, it recalculates your route. So Krishna's also like that. So there's injunctions in the Shastra. Do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. On the material plane, do this, do this, do this. On the purely spiritual plane, do this, do this, do this. And then you'll have the fastest, easiest route. We'll take you around all the traffic, and all of your obstacles will be gone. But if we're a fool, and we go straight when we should turn right, or we turn left when we should go straight, Krishna recalculates our route. It may be a longer route, maybe a more difficult route because of our own foolishness, but Krishna still helps us. Then, in this purport, Prabhupada explains the whole process of Shraddha to Prema. And he mentions that Bhagavatam 1.1.17-20 elaborately explains it. So I do also recommend you look at those quotes, to look at that part of the purport. So this is the highest perfection, to know Bhagavan and say, please, I want loving service. Please give me loving service. I can make no demands. I have no business making any demands for loving service. I have cheated you. I have lied to you. I have tried to control your material energy. I have harmed so many living entities. I haven't been very good at keeping my promises to you. I have nothing. What can I do? Whatever I've done has been by the mercy and ability that you have given me, and what I've done is so meaningless. I am so meaningless. This whole planet is meaningless. This whole universe is so meaningless. What do I have that I can offer? I am just begging you, please let me back in. Please give me your mercy. Please accept. Please. I accept whatever you want to do with me, however you want to do it. The Upanishad, the knowledge that brings one nearer to the Supreme Personality of God, of Krishna. And Prabhupada says in the purport, the entire process of Shraddha to Prema is hinted at in this mantra in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17-20. Explains it further. Prabhupada says in this purport, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord is itself an act of piety. By hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, one becomes cleansed of all undesirable things, and one's devotion becomes fixed upon the Lord. At this stage, the devotee acquires the brahminical qualifications and the effects of the lower modes of nature, passion, and ignorance completely vanish. The devotee becomes fully enlightened by virtue of his devotional service, and thus he comes to know the path of the Lord and the way to attain him. As all doubts diminish, he becomes a pure devotee. So I hope you've enjoyed these seminars on the Isha Upanishad, and we're a couple minutes past time because of our problems and delays in starting, but we can probably have a few questions. And you can ask questions on this presentation or on any part of the Isha Upanishad. Anybody have any questions, comments?
Mataji, I thought there was one more part.
No.
Oh,
sure. You sure this is it? Yep, that's it.
Anybody who's on free conference, I'll unmute you in a minute. Just give me a second.
Maybe we'll.
Okay, am I unmuted, Prabhu?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Well, wonderful seminar, Manichi. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it and got a tremendous amount out of it. I hope we can think of another seminar you could do starting next week if you got something else in your bag of tricks, because we really enjoy hearing
you. We've got lots more rabbits in the hat. We just got to think of which one we want to pull out.
Okay, good. We'll make sure we think of something by next Saturday. I want to ask you a question. I like your analogy of the GPS. What was that?
Prabhu, you got to make sure you're muted.
That was kind of a ho-hum sound there.
That's being recorded, folks, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, you like the analogy of the GPS.
Right, and so I assume that if we were to sort of elaborate on that, we would be setting our GPS for the proper destination, say in the morning by hearing Bhagavatam and chanting our rounds. This will help to set the GPS. This will program the GPS for us to take us to the right place. And so we follow
like
that
really
throughout.
Good.
We follow that throughout the day. But then sometimes we'll find that because we're not pure, that GPS will kind of lose its programming and default back to Maya settings. And so. Maybe not even noticing.
I see the GPS as being the guru, external and internal guru. And we say to the GPS, okay, I want to go home. You know, like with the GPS, you program it to take it to a destination. And then after you're there, you want to go home. So we've asked the super soul to bring us to the material world and engage us in material activities. And now we say to Super Soul, home, right? My son has a voice-activated GPS. Home. And then Krishna provides a guru who says, okay, here, calculating route. And the guru especially calculates the route for us, because although in one sense we are all at the same material destination, in another sense we're all called our destination. So each of us is at our own material, our own particular variety of illusion. So the guru looks at us and say, okay, this is the best route for you, Krishnadasi. This is the best route for you. This is where you are right now. You know, you are right now 20 years old and this and that. So you should enter the Grihastha ashram. You should do this. Or you are now this age. You should enter this ashram. You know, so we've got a route that's for us, and that route is as long as we follow that. I see following that route is doing things like chanting our rounds with attention, studying the shastras. But suppose we deviate. Suppose, okay, we start following the route, and then instead of being compassionate to some jiva who crosses our path, we're angry and nasty. You know, so some jiva comes in our path and deals with us, and our GPS is saying, turn right now, turn right, dare to turn right, and we don't pay attention, right? Instead, we get angry, and we plow on to the left. So does that mean that Krishna and Guru have abandoned us? So we get angry at somebody, and we feel offended, and we get hurt, and we stomp off somewhere? No, they recalculate. Okay, recalculating route. And I see this in terms of little things during the day and big things in our life. So big things in our life, you know, somebody falls down from sannyas. Does that mean that Krishna and Guru have abandoned them? You know, no. Recalculating route. You know, and yeah, if we had stayed in the best way, then our path would be the easiest and the fastest. The first route that's calculated for us
That's our easiest, fastest route. Doesn't always look like that to us. We may think, oh, these instructions given in the Shastra, these instructions given by Guru, this instruction given by Krishna is too hard. I can't do it. Let me do something easier. But as soon as we go our own way, then we go off the guidance of the GPS and we have to get our route recalculated. Mm-hmm. There's a really wonderful story by Samuel Johnson on this topic. I can give you a summary of it, though. The whole story is worth reading. I have it posted in my notes on Facebook. So a man sets off in the morning on his journey, and he's walking on the path, and the birds are singing, and everything's lovely. And then at a certain point, he sees a side path that appears to go parallel to the main path and looks more interesting, especially because the main path now is getting kind of hot. The sun is just beating on his head, and the way's kind of sandy. And he says, you know, that parallel path, it's a lot more shady, and looks like there's flowers. And so he goes off the main path, and he goes onto the parallel path. And for a long time, he can still see the main path, and he can see the water that he's walking beside. And gradually he forgets about the main path, and he's just looking at the trees and the flowers and the birds. And then he gets to a storm. It starts raining and thundering, and then he realizes that he's completely lost the way back to the main path and that he doesn't know how to go back anymore. So he trudges on ahead, and as he trudges on ahead, he finally sees a little light, and he goes to a cabin, at which he finds a wise person who tells him how to get back onto the main path. And this is Samuel Johnson's narration of life, youth and middle age and so forth. But it's also a basic narration that when we think main path talks to the Lord by the Shastra, and we think we want to take an easier path, what we are really doing is making our life a lot harder. But still, Krishna doesn't leave us. That's the main point. Krishna's not going to leave us. Krishna didn't leave Ajamil. Krishna doesn't leave us.
Ramananda Prabhu.
Yeah. Hare Krishna.
Could I ask a question of Urmila?
There was a question before that. We have two others in line before you.
All right. I will wait in line.
Jan, who is... he's in China, and he's asking a question. It says, what is the significance of idolism in Vedic culture?
Well, we don't usually use the term idolism. We use the term archa vigraha, or deity worship, although there are Indians that use the term idol. And the idea is that God has a form. And because God is absolute, his form and he are the same. So in this world, if I take a picture of my mother and put it in a frame on my desk, my mother is not personally there. Now, of course, by seeing her picture, I remember her. I feel some connection with her, but she's not there. She can't reciprocate with me from the picture. So an ordinary idol is something that's, first of all, imaginary. I'm just going to decide to worship God like this, and there's no reciprocation. But if one paints or draws or carves a form of the Lord as described in the scriptures, then that depiction of the Lord's form through paint, through stone, through jewels, or even in the mind, is such that the Lord is fully present there. It's not even that he's reciprocating through the form, but he actually is manifested in the form. And we have many, 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 many stories, both historically and in the modern day, of persons who have realized that this form of the Lord called the deity is not just some kind of a carving. I mean, look, even from a material point of view, here I am sitting on the big island of Hawaii. I'm sitting in a carport and I'm talking to a piece of metal and plastic. Now, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, somebody doing that would have been considered insane. But really, I'm talking to all of you through this piece of metal and plastic. And so even materially speaking, I can connect with somebody through an intermediary object. But of course, the deity form of the Lord is not like that. The deity form of the Lord is beyond that. You know, it's something totally beyond that. You know, like some science fiction technology where you're talking to somebody who's at a distance, but yet in some way they appear in your room. So Krishna can actually do that. In one sense, Krishna can do that because he already is there. He already is there. Ekopiso rachaitam jagadandakoti yachchakdirasti jagadandachaya yaranta andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. He's already in every atom. So why have a form at all? Because one who cannot yet see Krishna spiritually needs to have something to focus his mind, needs to have some place to put their devotion. But even today, I mean, I know of many, many people who had experiences with the deity form where they could understand that this deity is a person. This deity is a person. Well, they'll touch the deity and they'll feel that, oh, the deity is warm and soft, although from a material point of view, the deity is made of stone. Or well, they'll hear the deity speaking to them or see the deity moving. So it's not, idol worship is something that you make up in your mind. I think I'm going to worship a golden calf, and you just concoct something. Or it's, you're, instead of worshiping God, you're worshiping somebody else. That we're not interested in something like that.
Hi. There was a question from Rory Prabhu. If you can go ahead and unmute yourself, you can ask a question.
Okay, sure. You were talking about the GPS. You resist in writing, you disregard, you don't live. What about disregarding Guru's instructions after taking initiation?
Guru's instructions can be changed?
Hmm? Yeah, but it's not like a great offense, like where you're supposed to surrender completely like to your Guru when you take initiation.
I'm not sure if I understand. It's kind of hard to understand what you're saying.
Is it not considered a great offense when you take initiation from a Guru and then you disregard his instructions?
Okay, if you take initiation from a Guru and disregard his instructions, is it not considered a what?
Offense, a great offense.
Of course it's an offense.
Yes, but what would be the repercussions of this? Or,
of course there'll be repercussions. Your path to Krishna will be much longer and much harder.
Much longer and much harder.
Yes, but it's not that you'll be abandoned. That's the point.
Okay.
In rare cases, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati says, in very, very rare cases, someone who's taken initiation will not become delivered. But that's extremely unusual. Once you've started this path back to home, back to Godhead, especially once you've taken initiation, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati says you will be delivered. However, if you commit offenses, especially offenses against Vaishnavas, offenses against gurus, you're really deviating from the path. And although your path is being rerouted, it may be a really long detour or diversion before you get back onto the main road again. There's two things here. Better to stick to the best instructions. And if for some reason you didn't stick to the best instructions, Krishna is still taking care of you. You can still get back. Krishna is still guiding you. We don't have to think that just because I made this or that mistake, that therefore now I'm finished for eternity. That's the point in that purpose.
Suresh Parprabhu?
Yes. Let me get my moon mask on here, whatever it is. Jai. Urmila Mata, thank you so much for your beautiful KC stream. I love to hear you speak. Hadi Hadi. So I don't know, I confess to sort of dipping out of your stream of Krishna consciousness here, but one thing I've always wondered about, and tell me if you already covered it, but you know, the language of that mantra, 17, it sounds kind of strange. Now, oh my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. It doesn't sound like a pure devotional sentiment. Maybe it's a cultural trend, it needs culturally translating, or How do we understand that, that kind of self-absorbed sounding demand?
Well, if we take the premise that the devotee doesn't demand, let's just start with that premise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I mentioned in one of my other classes, and I was really struck the other day listening to a class Prabhupada gave on the seventh canto, ninth chapter, where he said, the devotee doesn't even say, I want to serve you. Which is interesting because there's dozens of places where Prabhupada will say that we do say, I want to serve you. Mm-hmm. But he said, the devotee doesn't say, I want to serve you. The devotee's just begging, please let me serve you. So the devotee's mm-hmm. making no, how can the devotee make any demands?
Mm-hmm.
How is that? You know, I go back to the analogy. If you're married to someone and you've cheated on them, you know, 10,000 times or 10 million times, what demands can you make? Can you make any demands? You just can't. And that's exactly what we've done to Krishna. We're Krishna's beloved. And instead, we've tried to have a love affair with the material energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done this in so many forms and in so many ways. And even after we've said, I'm going to surrender to you, we've probably still done it. We've mm-hmm. probably said, yes, Krishna, I'll surrender to you. And then we've still gone out and flirted with the material energy. You know that you come back and you say, oh, my dear husband, my dear wife, I won't do it again. I love you. I'm going to stay with you. And then, you know, a week later, we're out flirting with somebody else. How can you possibly demand anything? So how can you go to that spouse and say, remember everything I did for you? You should let me back in. But I see it's more part of that begging. Also take into account that, you know this as a teacher, that 70% of communication is body language.
Mm.
Are we still on it? 70% of communication is body language, and 23% is tone of voice.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So can you all still see my screen?
I can't.
No?
I can't see anything, but that's all right.
Ramananda, did you knock the screen off or no?
Yeah, I did. Give me a second. I can put it back up. I thought you were...
No, it's okay. Just leave it off because I was assuming everybody could see my screen. It's fine. So we don't have the tone of voice and the body language of the speaker, do we? Or we have a little bit of the body language of the speaker. What's the body language of the speaker? What is it? Can you see what it is?
I can't. You're referring to a screen here?
No, I'm referring to the verse.
Yeah, yeah.
What's
so
the
you're,
language you, of the speaker?
Oh, I see.
What's the body language? It's supplication. He's just in a prayerful mood, yeah?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. We have in mantra 18, falling on the ground at your feet. So the body language of this person is they're offering dandavat.
Yeah.
That's their body language. So remember me. Please remember me. Please remember that one time we had a nice relationship. Please remember that I am your eternal servitor. Please remember me as a servant.
Mm-hmm.
Please remember something good about me. Please don't just see all of my sins and all my transgressions, even though I keep committing them, and I keep committing them every day.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I keep committing them, even... after I say I'm going to surrender, I wake up in the morning, every morning, and say, Krishna, I'm going to dedicate every minute of this day to you. And then I mess up over and over and over again. But please, Lord, don't see that. I'm falling at the ground at your feet. Please don't see my sins. Please remove my sins. Please somehow see anything that's of value in me, something that's of value. See how I'm your eternal servitor. Please remember me that way. I see it like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very helpful. That sort of contextualizes the whole thing, just gives it kind of an emotional content. And I can understand that better now. Thanks.
I see these last four verses as being very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
They're full of greed. They're full of humility and greed and longing and obeisances and begging.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Anything else?
Well, I don't know if you would want to take Gyan had written quite a, like almost a paragraph here about, again, about idol worship. Do you see it in the chat or Skype?
Okay, I see it here. What is Murti for me? Everything can be seen, can be touched, can be realized as a Murti. The one that is in Murt Rupa is Murti. Understand the importance of a building, something inside that building. In Vedic culture, we have a complete immersion that looks like the normal person, stand in front. I think this is a long discussion that we can have on this. There's many points on this. You know, the main thing that I'm seeing here from his question is, you know, what's the difference between going to like a Muslim or a Christian place? So the Muslims, the Protestant Christians and the Jews, they're very opposed to having any kind of statue or painting of the Lord's form. The Roman Catholics and the Eastern Orthodox and the Buddhists, they do have depictions of the Lord's form. What we find is that, you know, some of them are really strict, like the really strict Orthodox Jews and the really strict Muslims. They won't even have a picture of their family. The Amish are also like that. They won't have any kind of picture of anything. You know, the Muslims won't even have a picture of a flower. But we do have descriptions of the form of God, and we do find that it helps to focus our meditation when we have the Lord's form as depicted in a painting or in a carved statue. And as far as it looking like a human, the reason that Krishna looks like a human is that he does look like a human. That our human form is a reflection of his form. So I think the full discussion on this is not so applicable for this particular class. I would suggest if you go to krishna.com that there you can find some articles specifically on the krishna.com, that there you can find... and I don't know how to type it here. But there you can find more explanations of this topic. So I would suggest you go. And you can also log on to the live help and discuss this topic in detail with those who are there to help you. Yes. Yes, very much. That was he's saying here he's not against any other religion. I just want that we should spread the depth of concept of Vedic culture to everyone. Yes, that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mood, if you read in Gitavali. Okay, is there anything else? Almost 9 o'clock. Okay, thank you very, very much. And hopefully we will have another seminar for next Saturday. Ramananda and I will try to work that out. Thank you for giving me this facility for speaking about Ishopanishad.
Well, thank you very much for putting up with all the distractions, and it was really, really great.
Thank you so much,
Mother. Hi, Ramila.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay.